Good evening. You're listening to the Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper.
And I'm Doyle.
And the Pledge Girls are in the bathtub, so they won't be with us tonight. Stay tuned, folks. We got one heck of a broadcast.
Somebody told us what we wanted to be. It was the end of the mind. Look behind and you'll see it was circus. You hide little. It was cat in the city. It was safe and convenient. It was right down the middle. It was fantasy galore. It was everything we ever wanted. It was that and so much more. Who was it then?
Investigation into the surprise early morning end to the broadcast career of Art Bell revealed that it is nothing more or less than a massive publicity stunt. The early morning announcement came as a complete surprise to Bell's listening audience, in fact reducing many to tears. Bell's revelation that what you are listening to now is my final broadcast on the air resulted in an unbelievable and almost unprecedented amount of publicity. The public's reaction ranged from outrage that a media personality could be threatened and forced off the air to speculation that Bell and his family had been abducted by aliens. It has been suggested that Bell's son is the reason for all this mystery. Art Bell used to have a Geo Metro that he said he loved and used since the days at KDWN in Las Vegas. He always talked about how fast it was up the hill to Pahrump from Las Vegas. Some months ago, Bell bought a Trans Am and gave his young teenage son the keys to the Geo as part of getting his driver's license celebration. Within days, his son had rolled and totaled the Geo. The story was recited by Art Bell many times during his broadcast. It has been suggested that Bell's self-termination may not be an act, but something related to his teenage son. That the straw that broke the camel's back may have occurred while Bell and his wife were in Africa, and his son and the house sitters were left in Pahrump. Some suggest that it may be too hard for the two parents to raise this son when the parents sleep at the very time the son is most active in a town that has city crime problems. The theory goes that Mel may be financially well off enough to have said that his son is more important than his career, that Bell might just be using the "I quit my career for you" story to prove to something to his son, or to himself, maybe. And these speculations seem to fit better than the other stories that are circulating about time travelers from somebody called Single Seven and the Lion's Claw rebirth in the King's Chamber ventured by SciTech, which is one of the greatest cons that Art Bell features on his show. But you see, these musings, ladies and gentlemen, simply do not fit the description put forth by Art Bell. He stated the threatening event happened about a year ago. His son's accident happened just a few months ago. He stated his reasons could not be made public, but he has recounted the story of the son's mishap on many occasions. There are much better ways, ladies and gentlemen, of handling such a situation without having to shelve one's career, especially for people like Art Bell, who have lots of money. But does it matter? Does it really matter? He might just use his son as the reason for his actions, no matter what the real reason may be. You must remember, ladies and gentlemen, that this is the guy that scared the hell out of his audience by broadcasting a fake shootdown of a plane by a supposed railgun at Area 51. A railgun, I might add, that absolutely does not exist. Every part and portion of Area 51 has been seen, photographed, and videotaped. That is, except for that portion which may be underground. All of you can easily purchase many of the photos and videotapes from many different sources. It's easy, and they're readily available. This is also the great deceiver who promoted a lie that there was an alien spaceship accompanying the Hale-Bopp comet. That lie prompted the suicide deaths of over 30 people who belonged to the Heaven's Gate organization. But it didn't faze Art Bell, and he went on with business as usual, just recently creating an entire mass hysteria across the country, turning an ordinary meteor shower into the landing of alien spaceships. Incredible. Just last week, Cincinnati-based Clear Channel Communications announced that it was taking over J-Corp, the distributor of Bell's show, in a $3.4 billion stock deal. Bell's program boasts around 15 million viewers on at least 400 stations nationwide. It is, without any doubt, the country's most listened to overnight radio broadcast. Topics covered by Bell and his guests were alien abductions, UFOs, Bigfoot sightings, six-fingered Antichrist, earth changes, and call-ins by time travelers from the future. I'll talk about anything, Bell said. I allow those phones to ring and I go straight to it. As a result, I get some very, very strange phone calls. In a recent broadcast, Bell told his audience to lighten up. This is just entertainment. That's what I want it to be, and that's what it is. Despite this admonition, millions actually believed that Art Bell's Coast to Coast Overnight and Dreamland shows were their only avenue to what they consider to be the truth. Keith Rowland, the webmaster of the Art Bell web pages on the Internet, issued this press release on October 14th. Art is currently not being threatened. His family's safety is not in danger, unless you count the onslaught of media. Art did not disconnect his phone and vacate his home. He is still home, safe and sound. Art is still age 53, not 51 or 52, as reported. He did not travel back in time. No one has recently threatened or intimidated him to force him off the air. It was truly his personal decision, as he stated, on the air. But you see, ladies and gentlemen, that's not what Art Bell said in his goodbye announcement. Bell stated during the wee hours on Monday, October the 13th, quote, "There was an event, a threatening, terrible event occurred to my family, which I could not tell you about. Because of that event and a succession of other events, what you're listening to right now is my final broadcast on the air. End quote. That's what Bell said. But according to the Nye County Sheriff, neither Bell or his family have ever been threatened by anyone at any time that Bell has resided in Nye County, Nevada. Sheriff Wade Lisicki Jr., now up for re-election, states emphatically, "There is nothing much to talk about. Art Bell is in no physical danger. Neither he nor his family has been threatened with injury. No investigation is underway. I had a long talk with Art Bell, and he told me everything," Lisicki said. "He thinks there is a threat. I don't see it that way. There is no physical threat. There is no threat at all. The operator told me personally that Art Bell's number was no longer in service when I attempted to obtain a statement by calling his home. KABC in Los Angeles reported his phone was disconnected when they attempted to do the same. His phone has been disconnected," said Henry Breen, a reporter with the Pahrump Valley Times, a twice weekly that barely got the Bell story in before deadline. Apparently, ladies and gentlemen, Art Bell's number was disconnected, despite Rowland's claim to the contrary. And the onslaught of media seems to be exactly what Bell's early morning announcement was designed to create. Is Rowland's press release the beginning of a turnaround which will lead to an alternate explanation that will pacify Bell's audience? Will Bell return to the air despite his statement that this is the end of this man's broadcast career? Art Bell's audience might become outraged if this all turns out to be a hoax. If they were misled to believe that he and his family are under some terrible threat, which is exactly what he said in his shocking announcement, his followers might become angry and deeply resentful that they were treated in such a callous manner. The wailing and gnashing of teeth that followed Bell's on-air resignation is unique in broadcast history. No other radio personality has caused such grief upon ending a career. At least, not in my lifetime. Art Bell's resignation brought on a global mass hysteria not witnessed by this author since the breakup of the Beatles rock group. The actual value in dollars of the publicity which has ensued is almost impossible to calculate, but, ladies and gentlemen, I can assure you that it is in the category of hundreds of millions. Even the New York Post fell victim to the mass hysteria, printing an article entitled "Art Bell Sends Fans Mysterious Message" by Don Kaplan. The article stated in part, "Art Bell, the spooky all-night talk radio host who dramatically quit on air Tuesday, told his fans yesterday he quit after a mysterious man from the future told him he and his wife were in danger." Bell's story, his first public statement since signing off the air 3 days ago, was contained in a rambling letter posted on an internet site used by Bell's fans. The message, ladies and gentlemen, as I told you on the air, was a hoax. The New York Post never bothered to check its authenticity, which came as no surprise to me. On October 16th, Craig T. Kitchen, president and CEO of Premier Radio Networks, issued this statement to the press. "Premier Radio Networks will continue to distribute both Art Bell's Coast to Coast and Dreamland programs in the regularly scheduled time slots. For a short duration, Art has requested special guest hosts to do his show. On October 19th, veteran talk radio broadcaster Hilly Rose will be the first of several potential guest hosts. The program's tradition of including knowledgeable guests will continue during this period. Art Bell will make a statement to his listeners during the first hour of his broadcast on Monday, October 19th on Coast to Coast with Art Bell." That's tonight, folks. And what a revelation that turned out to be. Did he lie? You see, Art Bell has not resigned at all. Instead, he is taking a little vacation while his show continues with guest hosts whom he has personally chosen. And despite his assertion that he will not return, Bell is scheduled to make a statement during the first hour of tonight's show. Talk about milking the cow. Really, now. I can't wait, ladies and gentlemen, to hear what he's going to say this time. Richard C. Hoagland, of the City and Face on Mars fame, a regular guest of Art Bell, followed with a release of his own. Yesterday afternoon, Thursday, October 15th, I had a wonderful surprise. My friend and colleague, Art Bell, called. We had perhaps the best off-air conversation in a year. Among other items, Art and I discussed not only his abrupt, shocking resignation Tuesday morning, but the reasons. I will not divulge details except to say that his, to many of his friends, completely enigmatic actions are sincere. They are not mere hype for Coast to Coast. They are not positioning for some mysterious behind-the-scenes contract negotiations with Premier, his parent network. They are simply rooted in a complex family problem, which has been building to a crisis for a year and which climaxed so messily on Monday night. There are government agendas and conspiracies, but I am satisfied from a first-hand conversation with my friend that this is not one of them. Unless we clearly separate this truth from all the rumors, we are lost. The serious subjects and agendas, can't believe you said that, and agendas discussed on Coast to Coast will be totally negated and ignored if we do not firmly distinguish a personal crisis from a black ops project. The good, actually great news, Art will be back. With time and a much clearer head, as well as much outside assistance, he can see a way clear to deal with the delicate issues which precipitated this emergency, and he assures me he will return to both the show and the audience he loves, as well he should, end quote. It is doubtful, ladies and gentlemen, that Hoagland would have made such statements if Art himself had not disclosed to him that he will return to the airwaves, and if Art had not asked him to post them to the Internet. But if he does return to radio, it will not bode well for anything Bell ever says afterward. But what were we to expect from someone who transforms a normal meteor shower into an alien invasion or something equally ridiculous on an almost nightly basis? Remember the screams of the people in hell, supposedly tape-recorded in a well 9 miles deep in Siberia? Remember that, folks? How can we ever believe anything that this man says? How can anybody possibly believe what this man says? Who, ladies and gentlemen, would ever believe him in the first place? Well, I'll tell you who. Are you ready? His loyal sheeple. That's who. In a Boston Globe story dated October 17th, Hoagland, despite the fact that he had earlier stated that Art's resignation was rooted in a complex family problem, stated this time, rogue elements working for the government, but not officially sanctioned by any agency, may have threatened Bell's wife in an attempt to force Bell to rein in his guests and pre-screen callers. How about that for a turnaround? I can see only two reasonable conclusions that one may reach from all of this, ladies and gentlemen. Either Art Bell is an emotional basket case in dire need of immediate psychiatric help, or this whole incident is an incredibly successful publicity stunt. And I choose to believe the second, or maybe even a combination of the two, given what I've heard on his broadcast. But you see, there's just too much money involved. The timing is just too perfect, coming the Monday before the Las Vegas meeting of the National Association of Broadcasters and during the sale of J-Corp, a sale involving billions of dollars. I also have reason to believe that Art Bell doesn't give a damn about the effect of his announcement upon his audience. Keith Rowland issued another press release on October 17th. It is great news to be able to suggest from the most recent press release from Premier that Art may be returning in a short while. While I've not been told a specific date of return, it has been suggested in the Richard Hoagland statement Art will be returning. I do know Art won't be able to tell you the reasons yet, so please don't bug him to tell. He will tell us when he can, like he stated last Monday night, when I can clarify this, I'll post again. That statement, ladies and gentlemen, confirms that Mr. Rowland is indeed helping to create the new reason for Bell's retreat from the air, and it won't be anything like the impression that you were left with in the early morning hours when you heard it. By the time, ladies and gentlemen, Art Bells and his employer's spin doctors finish with their snow job, no one is likely to remember that Bell misled them during his supposed last broadcast. You see, Art Bell stated, and I quote, "You may recall about a year ago, I told you that there was an event, a threatening, terrible event occurred to my family, which I could not tell you about. Because of that event and a succession of other events, what you're listening to right now is my final broadcast on the air. This is it, folks. I'm going off the air and will not return." End quote. With that announcement, he obtained for him and his new owners hundreds of millions of dollars of free publicity. In the entertainment world, it is hailed as a stroke of genius. And upon reading his statement again, and again, and even once again, I find that it is very clever and very well crafted. It might be explained as not having said exactly what so many believed it to say. But the truth, ladies and gentlemen, is that Art Bell is embroiled in contract negotiations, pure and simple. J-Core Communications Incorporated, the Covington, Kentucky-based distributor of Art Bell's radio shows, is the threatening event which occurred last year when J-Core acquired Premier Radio Networks. J-Core was bought last week by Clear Channel Communications Incorporated. Clear Channel represents the current threat to which Bell alluded in his now famous last broadcast speech. You see, ladies and gentlemen, Art Bell knows his audience. And he knew exactly how this paranoid audience would interpret his announcement. And he wrote it exactly for that effect. He did it on purpose to create a huge amount of publicity. It also puts a tremendous amount of pressure upon Premier, J-Core, and Clear Channel to cave into Bell's demands. J-Core's stock dropped $1.69 on Tuesday to $43.56 before recovering only 44 cents to $44, still down $1.25 from Monday's quote. Ladies and gentlemen, that's a powerful bargaining chip. In a nutshell, Art Bell has used and abused his listening audience in order to enrich himself. Nothing mysterious about that. The shepherd has once again sheared his sheep. Or sheeple, as the case may be. Mark my words, ladies and gentlemen. Mark my words, listen very carefully. Art Bell will be back on the air as the regularly scheduled host of his own broadcasts. And whatever reason he invents to tell his listeners will be believed by all of them, and his sheeple will forgive him, every single bleeding one of them. In fact, the herd is very likely to double because of his manipulation. Art will become a multimillionaire. The nightly parade of Martian wombats, goats that talk, transvestite vampires, travelers from the future, and woo-woo willies that walk through walls will continue with a vengeance. And all those whom Art Bell misled with his frightening announcement will love every single minute of it. It is a sad reflection of the mental state of his audience, and ladies and gentlemen, a very, very frightening indication that Orwell's and Huxley's visions of the future might have been grossly underestimated. Thank you.
I'm the king of the swinging road. Don't go beyond me. I reach the top and have to stop, and that's what's bothering me. I wanna be a man, a man cub, and go right into town and be just like the other men. I'm tired of mucking around. So ooh, I wanna be just like you. I wanna walk like you, talk like you too. You see it too. And it's like me. Cause I'm to be you.
You're listening to The Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper. According to William Jefferson Clinton, the most dangerous radio host in America. And now, you know why. Oh, yes, an ape like you can learn to be a human, too. Right, Doyle? Ladies and gentlemen, the question came up last week about playing one of our old broadcasts in which Paul, well, I'm not going to say his last name. He may not want me to do that over the air because he's still working and still coming up with more information all the time. But, you know, it occurs to me that you may want to hear just exactly how he did, what he did, here. Okay, folks. So, let me see. Where am I going now? We're going right here. That's where we're going to go. And, I've got to play this first. This is the... this is how the socialists do it. Guess you can see already, they don't get much done. At least not very fast.
Baby mine, don't you cry.
That's Hillary.
Baby mine, dry your eyes.
Talking to her babies, the sheeple.
Rest your head close to my heart, never too far, baby of mine. Little one, when you play. Let those eyes sparkle and shine, never
love and understanding. I can't take it anymore. I just can't take it anymore. Here's how we do it.
They are illegal, unlawful, unconstitutional, and are in fact not the constitutional government of the United States of America, and have not been for a long, long time, and we are proving it on this program. We are proving the treason, their long history throughout the ages, what they've done in the law to subvert and destroy this nation and bring about their one world totalitarian socialist, in their own words, ladies and gentlemen, in their own words. I wrote about all this in my book as I first began to open my eyes and discover what was happening when I was a member of the Office of Naval Intelligence many years ago. After over 20 years of research, I wrote a book. In this book, I outlined everything that I had discovered and eventually began broadcasting on May the 4th, 1992, the hour of the time. Many people began to listen to this program in disbelief, set out to prove me wrong, and found the documentation that I stated to be, in fact, in existence, to be real. Many of them joined my intelligence-gathering organization, CAGI, the Citizens Agency for Joint Intelligence, and began operating in secret, digging out information wherever they worked, wherever they lived, in government, out of government, within law enforcement agencies, within the military, everywhere. And we have put it together piece by piece, point by point, and everyone who has set out to prove me wrong has proved me right. And we have as our guest tonight one of those people, a CAGI member, one of the best researchers in our organization, who has duplicated all of my original research, as have several others. Whenever we assign research projects or whenever someone volunteers for a research project, we always assign other CAGI members to duplicate the research. In this manner, if one misses something, the other one invariably catches it. On the other end of this phone, ladies and gentlemen, is a man named Paul, who has operated in secret for many months, digging out what you are hearing in this series on treason. It is a duplication of my original research, and he has produced by far the most voluminous amount of material from his documentation of the treason, the destruction of the United States of America, than any other CAGI member to date, although there are other CAGI members working on this material, and some have contributed substantially. Paul, I want to welcome you to the hour of the time.
Thank you, Mr. Cooper.
And why don't we start out? I remember... to this day, I don't know if you read my book. Did you?
Parts of it. I haven't had time to finish it.
You've been too busy, haven't you?
A little bit, yeah.
Well, I remember sitting at home one day, and you as a CAGI member, of course, had a phone number to be able to reach me at any time that you need to. And you called me at home and said that you had been listening to the hour of the time and wanted to find documentation for some of the things that I had put out over the air. And I told you where this documentation was and what it was, and you asked me if I could furnish it to you, and what was my answer, Paul?
Well, we have to dig it up ourselves. And that's the way to do it.
So I told you you had to dig it up yourself, and of course nobody ever likes to hear that, but what did you do after that?
Well, I had some trouble trying to find it in the library, and you just kind of guided me along as to, I wasn't aware there was an appendix to the Congressional Record, and you stated that there was, and I went and dug further, and sure enough, it was there.
So most of the people who set out to do research, I know most of the people who have set out to find this voluminous amount of material, have started with the Arms Control and Disarmament Act, and as soon as they got to the paragraph that said that until the law is changed or until there is a treaty made, no provision of this treaty is to be construed to mean the disarmament of the American people, they stopped there. What did you do?
Well, I remember your program last spring with you were discussing the disarmament, and you told the people to go do their homework and look it up, and I went and looked it up, and it's so unbelievable. I kept looking and looking, and I kept digging and digging, and it's unbelievable what's there. There's a lot more there that we haven't had time to dig up.
That's true. Can you take us sort of step by step? How did you, where did you go, and what did you do, and how did you ultimately find, I remember one conversation we had. You said you'd reached a dead end and the librarian wasn't too helpful, and I gave you some hints on how to handle the librarian. And did you ever use any of those techniques that I gave you?
Well, definitely, yes. When dealing with librarians, unfortunately, many of them don't know much what's going on in the federal document area. And the nicer a person is, and when you work with the librarian and sometimes suggest things instead of telling them what to do, they are a lot more friendly, and they really will do what they can to find things. And unfortunately, I've had to dig things up on my own that they couldn't even find. It just takes a little common sense and some digging to find things. And it's important to work with the librarians, though, and really show that you appreciate all the work that they're doing and how they're teaching us to find these things, too.
In other words, a little bit of honey goes a long way, doesn't it?
Yeah, a long way.
Do you ever take her a flower or a bag of donuts or something?
Not yet. That library is quite a ways from here. So, usually it's a different librarian, so it's kind of hard to work that one out. But I do. They do want to have access to the information, and when it's available, they've all been very interested in it. So I'm trying to work with them as soon as we get it available.
So it begins to open their eyes also, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. They had no idea whatsoever.
Actually, no one does. Paul, the biggest reason that I wanted you on the program tonight is because I keep getting from people, well, I'm just one helpless person. I don't have access to the material that you do. I don't know how to do research. And what they're really telling me is, oh, it sounds like work. I'm not going to do that. That's what it translates to in my mind. And I'm not going to let them get away with it. So I wanted you on the show tonight. Because when I tell them that every bit of this is in the public domain, and anybody that's got perseverance and is willing to work can dig it out, and you're living proof of that, aren't you?
Yes. I must admit, though, it sure helped with all your input with, you know, that disarmament program you did, and, you know, let alone the banking and all the other areas I've worked with. But you also gave Mrs. Smith's address at the end of that program to thank her, and I also dropped her a line and thanked her, and between you and she both, you have walked me through. Some things are, because we don't know much about libraries, hard to find, and, you know, thanks to you and Stan when he was still helping you, and Bernadine, I mean, all three of you have, I probably wouldn't have found half of what I did if it weren't for your help. So, right. I mean, those guidelines really do help people, and they save a lot of time.
Absolutely, and the program that we did on Bernadine Smith's material, you then, through me, contacted her, and she was able to help you in your research also.
Exactly.
Well, why don't you start out and tell us how you began and what you started to find, and tell us about some of the mileposts, in other words, those times when you just stood there and said, oh, my God, and then what you did next. And also, I want to make a point, folks, that this guy, you know, this isn't the only thing he has to do. This is a very busy person. He attends classes, he has commitments, he has family commitments, just like everybody. He has a lot of work to do, and really, tell you the truth, when he first started this, he expressed a doubt as to whether he would have the time to do this research or not. And he certainly persevered and made the time, and he didn't have any more free time than I would say probably 95% of all of you listening. So why don't you go ahead and start? I'm just going to turn it over to you, and I'll tell you when the break gets here, and just tell us the whole story.
Well, there's three things I'd like to start out with, first of all. First of all, I'd like to thank you for discussing this on Shortwave, because that's the only way I found out about it, okay? And I thank you for that and your help and Stan's help, because he helped me. He was still helping you at that time. And secondly, I'd also like to thank your sponsor, Swiss America, for financing your airtime so that, you know, some of us out here are waking up, and we are working on doing things about that. And, you know, thirdly, Bernadine, you gave me her address, and I contacted her, and between all three of you, I mean, this work wouldn't be where it is right now. So first of all, that's important that, you know, all of you realize how much you've helped, and we're in this together. But I remember the first program. On a whim, I picked up the shortwave about a year or so ago, and I don't know how I tuned in, but I tuned in, and one of the nights you were discussing disarmament, and that it was all documented and in the federal documents, and it was unbelievable, and I jotted down some things, and my notes were kind of hard to read, and thankfully you ran a rerun, and I taped that one, and I started going to the library to find out if it was true, because you challenged us to do our homework. Well, I didn't want to believe it was true, but if it was, it's something seriously we all better face, and if we don't face it, we're going to regret it. So the local library is pretty small, so I started going to the nearest library that's a federal repository. It's about 25, 30 miles away, and they had some documents, but not many of the older documents. So then I went to a larger city quite a ways away, and they're a major federal repository, and they have had every single document but one. And I just started learning how to use the monthly CAD logs and digging up federal doc numbers and SUDOC numbers, and I copy everything, and then I bring it home. And now when I started compiling this, it's unbelievable. It's all there. It's unbelievable. But the key is we got to wake up and realize this, and when we get this information available, in order to save people time, all the SUDOC numbers are included, all the page numbers, newspaper articles, it's always the page numbers included, the section number. So if anybody wants to confirm it, and it's important that they do confirm it for themselves, this will save them a lot of time in the library so they can get educated and educate other people and start moving ahead and saving our country, because it's getting down to the wire.
Yep.
As you get through all this documentation with the public, if they're going to start realizing that, if they don't act now, they're going to be staring at some AK-47s to their head. So,
what was the first document you found where you realized that this was in fact treason?
I went right in sequence with the way you did the program, and I believe it would have been the public life of 297, and then off of that comes the blueprint for the peace race and that State Department document 7277.
And that showed you, in fact, that the United States was operating jointly with the Soviet Union in order to create a one-world government.
Yes, and that they were planning a one-world government under the United Nations, and they were pretty open about it. But the people, from what I have heard, I wasn't even born then, but from the people I've talked to, there was a lot of resistance. The American people did not want this, and that explains one reason why it's so under the rug right now. And it's all there if people would just look, but they're not open about it because they know the American people don't want it, and they wouldn't want it. And it's got to be done in secret, otherwise it wouldn't be happening. But they're getting more and more bold. So after Public Light 7297, a lot of things kind of happened probably through guidance and stuff, but I started finding out where to find out how many times it was voted on and amended. You know, fine, it was passed in 1961, what was it current now? And through digging and documentation, I got it all the way to the current date as in Supplement 4 of the United States Code, and it's still there, and they've even added to it, and they've even made it a little bit more explicit. So off of that, you know, with the Blueprint for the Peace Race and then 7277, I remember skimming through a section in your book on the One World Government, because, I mean, if anyone sits down and thinks about it, what is the purpose of a complete and total disarmament? The whole purpose is a One World Government. And to most people, that's a new idea. And that's so easily documented. It's unbelievable. It's just we got to know where to look. And that's when I ran into that one problem, finding the appendix from, I believe it was 1955, and different testimony entered into the congressional record openly talking about the a one-world government. And that's when I called you, and you told me there is an appendix. You know, you just got to dig a little bit deeper, and sure enough, it's all there.
Did you ever get mad at me because I wouldn't really give you the answers you wanted to hear but made you go work for it?
No. I've been raised that when you do things yourself, you a lot more. It's far better down the road, and I just appreciated how much help you did give. Because, you know, it's learning how to dig up these documents is something no one can put a price on. I mean, when I go into a library now, 95%, if not more, I can put my finger on it instantly because I know how to find it. And to me, I probably wouldn't have known that if you just would have told me how to get the number. And I appreciate you not telling me.
Well, you're a rare individual because most people do get angry. But in this process, you have, in fact, become an expert library researcher and, in fact, are better at finding things in a library than probably 99% of all librarians who do this as a profession for their entire life.
Unfortunately, yes. We would hope our librarians would know. And there are some really good librarians out there, and they really try to help. And
yes, there are, and we certainly don't want to take away from them. There are some excellent librarians out there.
But unfortunately, in that socialist mentality, a lot of them don't care, and they don't have the foggiest idea, and they let you know that, too.
Yeah, and a lot of them are indeed, in fact, socialists, aren't they?
Oh, yeah.
And could account for the disappearance of some books from some libraries, although I'm not accusing them of that because we don't know who, in fact, is removing certain books from libraries. But this is happening across the country. Have you discovered that in your research?
Yes. Every single document I've looked for, I have found. But sometimes you got to come in from a different avenue. And the one main library I do most of my research at, I sent down for the State Department document 7277, and they couldn't find it. I asked the librarian, I said it was an important document, if she could go look, and she went and looked personally, twice. And she came back up and she said, all I can tell you is that it was either stolen or it was misshelved. And I thought, well, isn't that a coincidence? But I was able to get that one through library loan, so I just came in from a different angle, and thankfully it wasn't stolen at that library or disappeared. So
now, since then, we've done a library search and found that, as far as we can tell, on the library search computers, it only exists in two libraries in the country at the present time. We are not going to name those libraries because we do not want them to disappear from those libraries. However, it is for sale in the John Birch Society bookstores across the country. So if you have a Birch Society bookstore in your town, you can get a copy of 7277 from them. Or you can just wait until we finish the publication of this entire set of documents. The entire research project will be published as a complete set of documents with total and complete references and sources and everything. I mean, it will be the most incredible evidence of the treasonous destruction of the United States of America that's ever been published in the history of this country. Now, Paul, during your research, you at some point found, as I found many years ago as a member of the Office of Naval Intelligence, that it was not coming to world government, but in fact, the world government was already instituted and in place, and we are subordinate to the United Nations Charter at this time and are, in actual fact, a state of the United Nations. What did you think when you discovered that?
So, the honest truth, all of this stuff that I have found and documented and, you know, your help found, it just, I still shake my head. I know I do believe it because I've gone and I've dug it up and I've copied it and I've read it. It just, it's so unbelievable that some of our political leaders, in fact, most of them, either out of ignorance or just because they believe in this, would sell out our country. I mean, that is really hard to believe, and it's really hard to accept, and that's one of the main reasons I documented this. I mean, this stuff is far out, and I had to go, I mean, dig it up. And if it is true, it's something we got to face up to and be responsible and deal with it and move ahead. And if it isn't, well, so be it. Well, unfortunately, it is true, and I've told you at times, too, there's times when it's just like a dream. You know, I'd wish someone would prove me wrong, and I'd wish someone would say, wake up, you know, it's just a dream. And unfortunately, it's not.
That's right, it's not. And all of this documentation comes right out of the Congressional Record, right out of the United States Code Books, right out of the records of the United Nations, right out of the newspapers of the world, right out of State Department documentation. This is not conjecture at all. It is actual fact. And according to the Executive and Judicial Department interpretation of Article 6 of the United States Constitution, the United States of America, in fact, does not exist anymore, but is a state of the United Nations under the United Nations Charter, and they are, in fact, in the process of disarming all nations of the world to bring into reality their one-world totalitarian socialist state.
And one interesting thing I'd like to throw in, and that it's very clear in the State Department document 7277, word for word, it states specifically that the states, meaning the country's armies, will be reduced, and they cannot. Their forces will be reduced in such a small number where there is no way they can challenge the UN army. And that is a serious thing that the people must realize, is that if we do have somewhat of a military left, it is only for policing at a national level and not challenge the UN in any form.
Yeah, and the real reason for it will be to police us.
Yes.
In fact, not to protect us from some outside force, but to subordinate us to the United Nations dictates.
And one interesting thing, too, about the United Nations that I don't know how many people really realize this. I wasn't aware of it until I started reading this, but when this is compiled, you'll get copies of it, we hear a lot about human rights, which is one of the United Nations conventions or charters and treaties. And what's interesting is if a person would read the Human Rights Convention right from the United Nations, which was co-authored with Mrs. Roosevelt, and also read the Russian Constitution, they will find that many of the articles are word for word.
And absolutely word for word.
And that's what the people have to realize, is that a one world government under the UN is welcome to the Fourth Reich. I mean, it's cut and dried, and I'm trying to get my hands right now on the new Russian Constitution to compare it to the old one and the UN human rights, and when we get that compiled, you know, we'll get it available through you and stuff. But the people have to realize, I mean, if they sat down and read the United Nations Charter, it has nothing to do with our Bill of Rights. It's exactly opposite of our Bill of Rights. And I just received in the mail today Boutros Ghali's book, An Agenda for Peace, right from the United Nations. And we'll have to try and get that available with the documentation, because it's unbelievable. He said the League of Nations unfortunately failed, and now, you know, we're going to do it through the United Nations. I mean, they're pretty clear as to what they're doing.
That's right. And folks, old Mr. Tom Valentine tried to make you not listen to me by trying to connect me with UFOs. The truth is Tom Valentine wanted me to talk about UFOs in his show, and it wasn't until I linked UFOs to the New World Order that he all of a sudden cut me off and said that he wasn't going to continue with me on the second hour. That's what scared Mr. Valentine, because Mr. Valentine is involved in this. If you listen to his show long enough, you'll see that he is covering up the real information that you need to know and that you will only hear on the Hour of the Time, nowhere else. Paul, what else can you go into that can enlighten people out there? Are there any shortcuts in research, any things that you found that people normally would not know where to look that they can go and will help them find information faster?
Well, if a person has a federal SUDAT number, that will save hours and hours of time.
Okay, now why don't you explain to us exactly what that is?
Well, according to the federal documents, every federal government document from the United States Government Printing Office has a federal SUDOC. The Library of Congress has its own number, so the SUDOC number doesn't do much good, but you can find, the librarians usually can help you find the Library of Congress number. But in all the other libraries with the federal which are federal depositories, you can simply, with the SUDOC number, go to the federal depository area and give them that SUDOC number, and they will pull up the document instantly for you.
Thank you.
Okay, Paul, can you continue where you left off?
Sure. When we were talking about the Federal Food Act numbers, the key issue is that the library is not a federal depository, and you can ask any librarian if your local library is. If it isn't, though, all you need is that Federal Food Act number, and you give them the number and the title with it, and they will transfer that document in. Either they will copy it for you, or they will transfer it in where you can copy it or study it. So that's why when I compiled all this, every single page has a Federal Food Act number or a state stat or a federal stat number. And, you know, newspaper articles, I got to the point where I'd get leads from different people, or I'd see copies of different so-called Patriot stuff. And it was rather annoying because they never gave page numbers and usually just dates. And unfortunately, I did find a lot of typographical errors, and there are some documents that I never did find. And
there are, in fact, a lot of documents floating around the Patriot community that are frauds. Isn't that correct?
That's what I would say, yes. And unless people go document it themselves, they'll never know if they're being deceived or if they know what's actually going on. And that's why when we get this available, it's the page number, the session number, everything is included, so anyone can go look it up themselves and find it. Now, there's one thing is if you want to go look up any type of federal document, and there's thousands of them out there, and they're still being published currently, is there's a government publication called the Monthly Catalog. Some of these are published just monthly, and you'll find them in the library monthly in a paper soft cover. Some of the libraries, the larger libraries, will actually bind these into books, usually by year or bi-yearly. It depends how many they're, how fast the books are for each month. But if you want to look up, like, State Department 7277, you simply look up the title in the monthly catalog in the index. And sometimes you gotta dig and look under different subject headings, but you should probably find that one under Freedom from War. But you're not going to find it the date that, as of it was released September 1961. You probably won't find it until October or November, sometimes even 5 months later in the monthly catalog. So sometimes it takes some digging through different monthly catalogs, finding that actual federal document as to when it was printed in the monthly catalog. And in the monthly catalog, you will be given the federal SUDOC number. And from there, everything's, you simply show the librarian that number, and they'll pull up the document, or they'll transfer it in from another library. And not all libraries will have the monthly catalog, so you'll have to find a library that has the monthly catalog where you can look it up, or, you know, all this documentation that we'll make available, they won't even need access to monthly catalogs. They'll just have a doc number, and they can send it in through library loan or whatever, and it'll save hours and hours of time. And unfortunately, it's rather annoying when, not on your end, Bill, but on other people's end, that they would have certain citations, and they don't exist. Now, either it's a typographical error, or it's an honest mistake, or it's an intentional mistake, and you never know unless you go dig it up, and that's crucial, especially with a lot of these far-fetched ideas coming out in the so-called Patriots.
You're listening to WBCQ, Monticello, Maine, USA.
Did you ever go look for one document that I ever cited that was not in existence?
Let's see. Did I ever... Run that by me one more time.
Did you ever hear me cite a document on this show or in my book and go look for that document and not be able to find it?
No. Every single document that you have talked about, I have been able to find.
I want to take a moment here to talk to the audience for just a second. Many of you fax us newspaper articles, information, newsletters. Some of you send this stuff through the mail. And I've got to tell you right now, anything that we get that does not specifically state the source, the location, the page, the section, all of these things that we're talking about here, we never use. You're wasting your time if you send us something that we cannot find. If you just send us a page with writing on it, or you clip out an article in a paper and you don't write the name of the paper, the date that the paper came out on, the page that this article appeared on, or the section and the page of the newspaper, it just goes into the trash can because we can't use it. Everything that's ever sent to us, we farm out to a CAGI member, or else I do the research myself, or Carolyn does it, and it must be duplicated by us so that we know it's genuine before we ever use it. If you are not willing to do that for us when you send these things to us, then don't bother sending them. Recently, I got several pages Xeroxed from a book. Whoever sent these pages to us had very carefully cut out the page numbers and the name of the book on the pages before he sent them. Why he would ever do that, I don't know. However, since I've read The Two Babylons, I recognized that these were pages from the book The Two Babylons. And since we have the book, we didn't need it. But why would anybody do something like that? Why would anybody send us information that would not reference the source? Well, folks, sometimes it's because you don't know to do that, and you think you're doing us a favor. And sometimes it's a completely fraudulent document with the intention of getting me to use it in order to discredit William Cooper, Kaji, and the Hour of the Time. It'll never work, because if we can't duplicate the research...
Interesting.
Would you like to recount some of the more interesting?
Yeah. I'd like to throw one other thing out, though, quick, on the research and stuff. What still I find astonishing is that I did rather well in school, and I went to a private school, thankfully, because my parents sacrificed for that. But what surprises me is I have not met one person to this day who knows what exists in the libraries and how to find it in person. And I find it so fascinating that there are thousands of government documents. They have years and years of government documents on weather control and all these different subjects that exist. And that astonishes me that we were never taught any of this in school, and I find that very interesting, and it was really frustrating at first. I remember one of the first nights I was in the library, and I used my calling card, and I called Stan, and I asked him, I said, you know, I'm having difficulty finding this, because we had the newer United States Code, and he told me, he said, look in Title 22, and he kind of walked me through it, and sure enough, it was there. But at first, it was really frustrating. It was a lot of hard work, but I believe we have to know what's going on, and we have to have the facts when we talk to people, and the more a person works with it, the easier it gets to be, and now most things I can walk in and just put my finger on things pretty easily. But ironically, in Washington, and this is nothing against librarians at the Library of Congress, but there are some exceptional librarians there. Unfortunately, they don't work every day, but it was really interesting in the law library section. I was asking them, actually, what is a charter and how it's issued by Congress and what are the rules and how a person can find that, and they didn't know. And that's something I had to pursue on my own, and I had another lead from a friend, and I have to go through the Judiciary Committee on that. But it's just because a person may not find the answer they're looking for at that time, you got to come in from on different angles, different perspectives, and you got to keep digging until you find it or until you prove that whatever lead you're going on is not an accurate lead. And that was interesting, and it was interesting too as everything was shut down conveniently for the weather. And up here we just had a week of 35 below, and it's cold, but down there they're a bunch of socialists. They're more than willing to get a free day off. But when we were down there, we paid a little visit to the House of the Temple, which is ironically 13 blocks directly north of the White House and in a perfect square with Washington's obelisk with the Capitol. And it's a very interesting building. And
now, many of our listeners don't know what you're talking about. Some of them are new listeners. Just exactly what is the House of the Temple, Paul?
House of the Temple is the head building of the Supreme Council of the Southern Jurisdiction of the Scottish Rite of the 33rd Degree. And I didn't know it existed. I lived out in Washington for a while, and until I started tuning into you, I had no idea what the secret societies were, obviously the Masons, and I didn't even know that place existed until I ran into someone who said that, and I made it a point to visit there the next time I went to Washington, and we did visit. And ironically, when you see the outside of the building, there are two sphinxes in front. One has its eyes wide open, and one has its eyes semi-closed or semi-open. And according to the tour guide, they're symbolic of power and knowledge, and you can't have one without the other, and vice versa. And the temple is shaped...
Now, wait a minute. Did you hear that, folks? Power and knowledge, and you can't have one without the other. My people perish for lack of knowledge. Go ahead, Paul.
Okay. And you'll notice that the temple is shaped at the top. It's a pyramid without a capstone on it, but there's 33 columns on the outside, and they're all 33 feet tall. And the walls, as you go in the temple, on the front door, on the knocker, there's a lion's head, okay, on each door. And as you go in, the walls are 8 feet thick of solid marble. I believe it's marble or granite. 8 feet solid thick. And what's interesting is as you go in there, the tour guide had an interesting comment. He said that what the Masons teach is freedom of thought, freedom of speech, and freedom of action, which is an interesting freedom that's added.
That's right.
Very interesting, because you and when your guest, Ralph Epperson, Ralph Epperson, were on, you very clearly pointed out the freedom of action. And as you go in, they will, they're willing to let you take photographs. They're willing to let you actually do a movie or a video camera. There's one room they won't let you do that in, and that's J. Edgar Hoover's room, who was a 33rd degree and a Knights Templar, and among other things. But they show different pictures of major people who were Masons, and the symbology, they come across like they're a very benevolent group, and I've documented in Albert Pike's book, Morals and Dogma. He has his own special room there, and his body is buried at the temple.
That's right, his body. General Christopher Albert Pike is buried in the house of the temple.
Exactly. And what's interesting is I did find Morals and Dogma at a library, but conveniently some of the pages have been cut out. But beside the point, after, it's very clear that the first 3 degrees, he's very clear in his book about that, they don't know what's going on. And the tour guide and the few Masons I meet, they come across like they're a very benevolent, charitable organization. And if a person didn't know the secret underlying truth as to what the 33rd degrees and higher know, they probably would be awestruck with the whole temple. But thankfully, the symbology is everywhere. The serpents, as you look on the outside of the temple, looking in on three sides, you'll see the rising sun with the double-headed eagle, which is the new symbol of coat of arms for Russia. It's on their new coin, the double-headed eagle. And you'll also see the serpents. What's fascinating inside, sometime, Bill, maybe you should have someone go and do a video, then you can make that available, like the Hotel Luxor?
Luxor, yeah.
Yeah, because I think people, I mean, it confirms everything that you've said about the secret societies, but one of the most astonishing things is no matter where we turn, we keep finding these people. They were rather excited because they have a Masonic apron, and it's a very special Masonic apron. The picture that we see of the man standing on the moon in the spacesuit, he is conveniently holding this Masonic apron.
Now, wait a minute. Let's go back. Which photograph are you talking about?
I'd have to, I'm trying to remember which one. If he's just standing there facing, you know, the viewer.
Is he holding the flag or anything?
I don't recall if he's holding the flag. All I know is he pointed out he was holding the Masonic apron, and you could see it clearly in the photograph, the square and the compass, if you look, and that's what blew me away, so I didn't even notice. All I noticed it was, you know, when I grew up in school, that is the common picture we saw of the man standing on the moon. And what floored me was his letter was there. He's a 33rd degree Mason, and I'm not familiar with, that was before my time, and if you mention the name, I'm sure I could tell you exactly who it was. He had a letter there. He was a 33rd degree Mason, and I don't know what the big deal was. Maybe they exposed it to the moon atmosphere or something, but it's clearly visible in the picture, and they have it on display, the picture showing this, and they have the actual apron there, too. They also have President Bush's, some of his cufflinks with Vice President Quayle. They had a couple letters from Mrs. Bush. Albert Pike has his own room, just like J. Edgar Hoover. And he supposedly has over 400 or 500 actual writings or works, and Morals and Dogma were everywhere in that room. The library is open to the public, and the library is just loaded with Masonic literature, and anyone can go read this stuff and find it for themselves. It's clear. And
now, can you imagine how much power they had in the United States and in the world with J. Edgar Hoover, a 33rd degree Freemason, hand-picking the agents for the Federal Bureau of Investigation, digging up dirt on all the people in office throughout this country, and then paying them a visit and telling them, hey, we got this, this, and this on you, and if you don't go along with us, you're sunk. Now, we know that happened because it has been revealed throughout the years that that's exactly what J. Edgar Hoover did. And this, ladies and gentlemen, accounts for a lot of the actions of the Federal Bureau of Investigation in recent years. And with Randy Weaver, with Gordon Call, up on Whidbey Island, with the MOVE Group, with the Sibianese Liberation Army, which, by the way, was created in a mind control experiment in the prison system in California, which was documented, folks, by the Napa Sentinel, and the most recent debacle, the massacre at Waco, Texas. What else did you find, Paul?
At the Masonic Temple or at the Library of Congress or
anything.
I did find a couple books at the Library of Congress with the 13th Amendment stated word for word. They were in the rare book collection, and I mean, it's so.
So they have, in fact, taken the real 13th Amendment from the Constitution and substituted it with something else.
Exactly. And what's interesting is that, you know, the problem I have with that is the Constitution, in my eyes, is the highest document in the land, and it's nothing to be tampered with. And all the research we've dug up on that, it sure looks like it's been tampered with. And what's fascinating is very few, if any of us, knew anything about it.
That's right. These people are, in fact, traitors.
Exactly, and that people have to realize they better look up the word treason, and they better learn. When I grew up, I used to respect Americans for having a backbone and standing up for what's right and being brave and courageous. And all I can say is they better look up the word treason, and they better start realizing which politicians. And I've talked with a lot of them personally, and there are very few, unfortunately, that are on our side. They know exactly what's going on, and they've been part of it. I mean, in the documentation, you'll find the most current records we have found on the updates on Public Life 7297, which is talking about a complete and total disarmament. Conveniently, some of the voting records don't exist. But the people better realize how their own representatives in the House and Senate are voting on these things and make them accountable. And if they're selling out the country, get them out of office and get some decent people in, because this is flat-out treason, and they're getting so bold. And as you know, you go through all this documentation, Bill, the people are going to start realizing how bold they are. A lot of these newspaper articles, I got leads from other people, and some of them I just ran across skimming through the papers, and they are very bold. I just mentioned to you, it's on its way. Front page, Washington Times, December 15th. The new Army manual that comes out next month shows our troops literally under the United Nations. And it's about time people realize that. You know, our troops in Desert Storm, Desert Shield, whatever they want to call it, there were no insignias on those vehicles.
Desert Scam is the real word.
There you go. That's exactly what it was. And I have George Bush's exact quote from the weekly compilation. I just got that, where he said that Desert Storm, that whatever war you want to call it, that was implementing the New World Order. Word for word from a government printing office document. And the people, I mean, the documentation is all available. The key is now we got to start moving ahead and start realizing the traitors, they have to be taken out of office. And, you know, we're not, if they're scared about doing that, they better reflect back on Russia and communism and socialism. They better understand what it is in their mind, and they better start reading Gorbachev's own book called Perestroika, which some of it's in the documentation, where he is openly a socialist, he is openly a communist, and he just happens to have an office on the Presidio, the oldest running military base in the United States in San Francisco. And anyone can go get his phone number out of the library. They can write him and find out who's on his board, which is interesting. It's a bunch of congressmen, ex-congressmen. And
ex-high officials of the United States government, I might add.
Yes, very high.
And he is listed as an official advisor to the President of the United States of America. And in his book, he states, don't be fooled by the dissolution of the Soviet Union.
And one interesting comment I might add, when you get into the State Department document with that, when Gorbachev and Reagan signed the INF Treaty,
uh-huh.
you'll find in the fine print there that Mr. Schultz even says he read Gorbachev's book.
That's right.
So he's very aware of what's going on.
That's right.
And he's conveniently on the advisory board. But the people better realize, I mean, Gorbachev is more than clear and open as to what he's doing. It's the one world order, and that if they think this is painful, well, they better project themselves into the future into a socialist, communist,
that's right,
police state. And if they, this is heaven compared to what they're going to start facing down the future. And I'm not raining on anybody's parade. When they start reading the actual government documents and start digging for themselves, it's a rude awakening, but it's true, and we got to wake up.
That's right, and we're out of time, Paul. I want to thank you very much for being our guest tonight. I want to thank you so much for all the work that you've done, most of it unsung in libraries, at tables late at night, and the sweat that you've put in for this country, I think is going to go a long way to help liberate us.
Sure.
Ladies and gentlemen, you've heard it. Now you know that if he can do it and I can do it, you can also do it. Here's your marching orders. Picks and shovels, and get to work. I can hear you all getting your tools ready and getting up to march off and do your work, dig it out, and expose it. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yes, Mr. Cooper. This is Vince from Chicago.
Hi, Vince.
I am the person that called several months ago and asked Mr. Art Bell to have you on as a guest on his program.
Oh.
And your programs for the past 3 weeks, and I know a couple of weeks ago a caller had called in and mentioned that James Collier had died suddenly of cancer. I was just wondering, I've been trying to verify this on James Collier's website and by email, and I haven't been getting any response. I was wondering if you knew that to be true, if he did die of cancer.
No, I said that night that he called that I had heard it, but I do not know that it's true.
Okay, if anybody out there has any...
I also cannot find anybody who can get in touch with him either.
Yeah, I've been trying to. I don't know if you ever heard that debate where James Collier debated Richard Hoagland, and Collier said that we never went to the moon. Did you ever hear that debate on our
program? No, I didn't hear that. But if he's talking about the Apollo space program, he's right. We may have gone to the moon, but if we did, it was not in the Apollo space program.
Right. And James Collier, he had a video called Was It Only a Paper Moon? Where
yes, we have that.
Yeah. Very interesting. I've been trying to verify this, but I can't get this information about James Collier.
It's more the video was more than interesting. It just blows NASA right out of the water. Proves with their own equipment that the astronauts, if they were in their spacesuit, couldn't even have got in or out of the lunar lander.
Right, and I believe the date that James Collier debated Richard Hoagland on our bell was July 24th, 1997. So if you're on the internet, you can probably archive that program. And I'll tell you what, one of the most interesting programs I ever heard, and James Collier pretty much had me convinced that man never walked on the moon in the Apollo missions.
I'm convinced, too.
I know. I've been looking at your website. And, Mr. Cooper, I know you've been lambasting Art Bell and Richard Hoagland and whatnot. I do want to say one thing about Richard Hoagland. He seems, if you've ever listened to him carefully, he seems that at times he's gone down that same direction that you go in with the mysteries as far as symbology.
That's because he's a member. All of his supposed mathematical equations that connect supposedly the Giza plains and the pyramids at Giza and the Sphinx with the so-called monuments on Mars and things that he says are on the moon are all right out of the mystery school.
Right. I thought that maybe him and you had something in common with this. You know, he talks about the overthrow of our country and our constitution and whatnot, and he sounds like he's almost on the same page as you as far as the mysteries and that they're the bad guys.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if that's correct. If he, being a member of the lodge, has all of a sudden realized that. That he's wrong and is trying to correct himself, that's commendable. But I don't believe that that's true.
You know, he was on, Hoagland was on shortwave last night. I don't know if you heard him.
No, I didn't.
He had mentioned something about his doing his symbolic work with the mysteries and whatnot, that something is going to happen on December 7th. Have you heard anything about that? He didn't say exactly what's going to happen. He kind of left you hanging.
Well, there's probably going to be some Japanese war veterans having a toast to their success at Pearl Harbor. Other than that, I can't think of anything.
All right. He was talking a little bit last night on the radio about cattle mutilations and how this ties into these occult rituals.
No. That's a total deception. And if that's what he's doing, then he's trying to deceive you.
Well, he's saying it's not aliens doing cattle mutilations. It's these occult members that have been performing these rituals for thousands of years.
No. Not at all.
No?
It is not occult members, and it is not aliens. It's the United States government's program to measure the effects of low-level radiation leakage from atomic power plants, atomic weapons assembly facilities and storage facilities and national laboratories by measuring the effects of the low-level radiation through the food chain. It's released either accidentally or on purpose and goes downwind and settles on grass and fields. The cows then eat this radioactive low-level contaminated food. And if you'll notice, the mutilations always have a portion of the jaw and lips. The tongue is gone. There's a 6-inch in diameter patch of skin that's always gone. The rectum is always cored out. The sexual organs are missing. And on cows, sometimes the udders are taken also, and these are all specific areas and organs where one would look for the effects of radiation.
Mr. Cooper, you're doing a fine job. I love your radio program. I just want to say that I have a habit once in a while of listening to Art Bell, actually quite frequently. I find it entertaining. And I just want you to know that not all the people that listen to Art Bell are sheeple.
Oh, I know that. When I speak to sheeple, I'm speaking to the sheeple. Anyone whom that word upsets is a sheeple.
Right. And just keep up the good work, Mr. Cooper.
Thank you.
Take care.
Now, when I use that word, folks, I'm not talking to you if you're not a sheeple, but if you get upset when you hear me use that word, you are a sheeple. That's the best indication that I know of to find out who they are. When they call me up and say, I resent you calling me a sheeple, I say, well, you are one. You've just confirmed it. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yes, this is Joe from India.
Hi, Joe.
October 24th.
Yes.
On October 1st, you made a prediction.
Yes.
That on October 24th,
no,
a market crash.
I said on or before.
You said on October
24th. I said on or before. Don't put words in my mouth. I know exactly what I said. I also posted it on the internet. I said on or before October the 24th.
I repeated it. It would be a market crash.
Yes, that's correct.
And the end of paper assets.
No, I didn't say it would be the end of paper assets.
What did you say?
Get the tape and listen to it.
Well, what's going to happen on October 24th?
I said on or before October 24th. Are you hard of hearing?
What is going to happen on or before October 24th?
I told you. Between the time that I made that prediction, which was back in July, when the market, it was 9,300 and...
No, you made this prediction on October
1st. I made the prediction in July and posted it on my website. I repeated it on this broadcast on October the 1st.
I heard it on October 1st.
Good night. I don't have time to play games with silly idiots who can't even understand English. I made the prediction in July. When the market was at 9,370 some odd points, I posted it on my website. It is in, ladies and gentlemen, later became part of a story and is in the directory of press releases on our website, harvest-trust.org. I predicted that on or before October the 24th, the New York Stock Exchange would lose 2,500 points. That's what I predicted. In that period of time, it did lose 1,800 points. If it doesn't reach 2,500, I'll be very happy. But I'll still be more correct than anybody listening to this broadcast or any other person who has made any predictions regarding the stock exchange. And I know when I made it, and so do the people who frequent our website and saw me post the prediction back in July. I repeated it several times on this broadcast, not just October the 1st. Now you go back to your playpen and see if you can find some toys that you can understand. 520-333-4578. I can't believe some people. You know, if you want to call me up and act intelligent and talk as if your brain works, then you're perfectly welcome to do so. But if you're going to call me up like that, then, you know, you're just not going to make it on this broadcast. This is not the Art Bell Show. We don't deal with maniacs here. 520-333-4578. Is the telephone number if you'd like to call in. And in the meantime, we're going to go do this.
Stay awake. Don't rest your head. Don't lie down upon your bed. Stay awake.
evening. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Bill. Richard from California.
Hi, Richard.
I just heard about your broadcast the other day from, I think it was Dan Tompkins on Fife and Drum, or Mark Cronkey, one of those people, so Stat Miller, on the satellite.
Yeah.
Yeah, they put in a plug for it. I didn't know that you were at 7415 until I heard it. So.
Well, there's probably still a lot of people out there that don't know yet, but the word is spreading.
Yeah, I'm passing it around as much as I can as well. It's more or less occurred to me that the reason why the New World Order has been, had what success it has, which it shouldn't have any, but the reason it has is because the foundation of our country has been so eroded by the infiltrators and fellow travelers, and well, like they're like termites, they just eat away at the foundation of it. So people that go to public schools and don't have the benefit of broadcasts like yours,
their brains have been destroyed.
Right, really have no way of judging anything.
Not only that, they're not taught what we used to be taught, which was to question and think for ourselves. Philosophy is not taught anymore, except for three: Kant, Hegel, and Marx.
Right.
And if you study Marx and Hegel, then you can't do anything for the rest of your life.
and they aren't studied in such a manner where you could even discern the Hegelian dialectic, which.
No, not at all. And there are no opposing philosophies presented or encouraged. And the Constitution is not taught. The true history of this country is not taught anymore. And people are punished for questioning anything.
I've really been wondering. I've been hearing so many people talk bad about our beloved America. And I've been wondering why these people, when they were in such a workers' paradise where there was gun control and the workers had such great high standards of living and how wonderful things were, what caused them to leave their native lands and come over here?
Well, you'll notice the ones that left their native lands and came over here are not bad-mouthing anything. It's the socialists here who have never lived under such a system that actually believe all the crap they've been fed, that they're going to somehow create some utopian government and they're going to have peace, love, and what's the other one? Peace, love, and something. Peace, love, and I don't know.
Probably something free.
Huh?
Probably something free.
Well, yeah, it's all going to be free, of course. You don't think they're going to work for anything, do you?
But I don't know if you probably don't notice this in Arizona, but there's a phenomenon here in California where you have people.
Oh,
peace,
love, and understanding.
Okay. Where you have people of Mexican descent, actually Mexicans, running around with the Mexican flag around their license plates. I don't know if you've noticed that or not.
Well, the Mexican people are very, how would you say it? They don't come here. Let me make one thing clear. A lot of Mexican people, in fact, most of the ones who are coming across the border today are not coming here with the idea or the hope of staying here and living. They're coming here with the hope that they can make enough money to go back home and be able to take care of their family.
I wonder how we deal with this this crowd of Mexicans that are displaying the Mexican flag and they're so proud of their heritage, which
well, they should be.
Well,
why shouldn't they be proud of their heritage?
Well, they were conquered by under 600 men.
Pardon?
They were conquered by under 600 men. Cortez, he conquered the whole country with under 600 people and only two combatants.
Oh, come on. Cortez has horses and they were on foot.
Sure.
Have you ever tried to stand up in front of tanks? That's what they were.
You conquer a whole nation with under 600 people and only...
If you have guns and cannons and horses and all they have is spears and bows and arrows and they're on foot against a cavalry charge? Yeah!
Well, prior to that, they were the Aztecs and they used to sacrifice virgins and skin them and then wear their skin. I don't think that's much to be proud of.
Well, where are you from?
I'm American.
What's your ancestral heritage? You weren't
Belgian. There's not much to be proud of there either, but I don't have to live with that garbage because I'm an American.
Well, that doesn't mean that other people can't be proud of their heritage.
Well,
I mean, almost every people that lives upon the face of this earth at some time in their history sacrificed virgins and tore the hearts out of their enemies, and some of them even ate those hearts and their whole enemies.
Yeah, well, we never did it in this country.
Well, nobody's... How do you know we didn't do it in this country?
Well, because it's the only free country in the history of the world for all people, isn't it?
Well, it used to be.
Well, is that the way it's founded?
Well, let me tell you something. During a storm, I happen to know this for a fact, some settlers got caught up in the mountains of California, and they ate each other.
That's right, and that was an unusual situation in that it was either die of starvation or commit cannibalism.
Oh, but you said we don't do that in this country.
Well.
And I can give you many other instances.
Yeah.
I can give you instances of people out in the Western Plains that ran out of food and didn't have anything to eat. They killed an Indian and ate an Indian.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised. However, were those people acting within the constitutional bounds?
You're getting a little ridiculous. You made a statement that it doesn't happen in this country. I'm just proving to you that you're wrong. It does.
Okay.
It has happened in this country.
Yeah, it has, but it wasn't institutionalized as it was with Mexico and cartels. Well, you know, if you want to argue and you want to have people run around with Mexican flags here in America and destroy it, well, that's fine.
Well, how are they destroying it by having a Mexican flag?
Well, because a nation is a nation, and a nation has a common language.
Not anymore, my friend.
A common background.
Not anymore.
Well, then it's not a nation. Then it's a hodgepodge of garbage, and it can be ruled by anybody.
Well, as long as you think that way, then it probably will be that way wherever you live. But wherever I live, I get along with people from other cultures and other races and other countries, whether they have a Mexican flag or not, and we get along pretty well together.
Well, that's good.
We all have the same goal. We understand and love freedom for all people, not just you. All people and all religions. In all places of ancestral origin, and I don't care if they have a Mexican flag or not.
You flee a miserable, sticking dictatorship where the people live in absolute poverty that's run by 18 families, and you come over here and you parade that around?
I don't know who you're talking to. I didn't do any such thing.
I'm talking about the people portraying foreign flags, particularly Mexican flags.
Well, you kept saying you.
I didn't mean you. I didn't mean that. I meant they.
Okay.
And, it just seems to me that it's kind of a slap in the face for every American that defended freedom and liberty and still is defending freedom and liberty today.
Where did your ancestors come from?
Belgium.
Belgium.
Huh?
And they came over here to what?
They came over here for freedom and liberty, and I'll tell you a true story what happened over there. They had went for these firearms, and they had registration, and there was an old man in the street, and they said, "Oh, man, we got a registration paper for a pistol. Where is it?" He says, "I don't know where it is," and they shot him right in the head. He crumpled dead right in the street.
Yeah.
And when they outlawed the shotguns, my ancestors came over here.
When they came over here, did they immediately learn to speak English, or did that fall to the next generation of children?
I really don't recall. I believe they spoke English the whole time that they were here, from the time that they learned it. And they, a couple decades ago, some of them went back there to visit, and they were not impressed with it. They were very glad to get back here.
Yeah. Well, did they still hold to some of the old holidays and cultural practices?
Not that I'm aware of.
I'm talking about the first group that came.
Not that I'm aware of. I couldn't say. I have no evidence one way or the other. I don't think.
I would venture that they probably did. I mean, most people are reluctant to give up traditions and things that they're familiar with. It gives them comfort. And usually they find other people just like them who came from the same place, and that's the neighborhood they move in. And it's still that way in New York City today. You'll have the Italian neighborhood, the Jewish neighborhood, the Bulgarian neighborhood. Over here, you got the Irish neighborhood, and you know, that's generally what people do.
And
on St. Patrick's Day, how come you're not complaining about all the Irish flags on St. Patrick's Day?
Well, actually, I'm not real fond of it, but they have assimilated, and some of them have assimilated. Maybe we should start complaining about it. I mean, they left a miserable slave state, we have people like the Kennedys representing that country. Maybe we should complain about it. Maybe we should complain about anybody that wants to fly a foreign flag of their ancestry in here, where they can put all that behind them and live free.
Well, they're not really flying a foreign flag over cities or anything like that. It's a remembrance of where they came from.
It's
an attachment to their family and their people and their place of ancestry.
People wish to remember where they came from. However, here in Southern California, it's turning into a conquering force. It's a conquering force in that their language is being shoved down our throats.
How is their language being shoved down your throat?
Well, when I pick up the telephone, it's pressed one for English and two for Spanish.
And which one do you press?
I press one.
Well, then how is Spanish being shoved down your throat if you have a chance to press one and listen to English?
Well, do we have a common language in the nation? Maybe we should go back to speaking Irish and push 5 for Ireland and 2 for German and 6 for Indian and 8 for Russian.
Well, maybe we should.
Yeah, if you think that that is the way to have a nation.
I think the way we should have our nation and any other nation on the face of this earth is by letting people be free to do what they choose to do, as long as they're not injuring your person or your property or the property or person of any other human being. I don't care what they do, as long as they're not hurting anybody else.
The fact that they come here from slave states and vote exactly the way from what they left, that doesn't concern you either.
They don't vote the way they did when they left. They come here and they're scarfed up by the Democratic Party, who promises them that they will get all these great benefits from the government if they vote Democratic, which means socialist, and that's a manipulation of these people. It's not their idea, and they don't even know what the hell's going on. They just do it because somebody's telling them if they do, they're going to get all these free things from the government.
Would you say they are ignorant or stupid or both?
Well, I'd say that they're very ignorant. They come here from a totally different culture, very, very poor, poverty-stricken. Most of them have never had anything in their life, and when somebody comes and promises them all of that, if all they'll do is just vote for a Democratic candidate, it's ignorance. It's not stupidity.
All
it's
right.
Wanting a better life. It's coming from a place that you can't even conceive of.
That's
it's
correct.
Living in a ditch with human feces and not being able to get a job or take care of your family or even buy a decent pair of shoes.
That's correct. And what type of government do they have there?
A government that they got away from, which was the same thing that you would do. If you were down there living in that miserable filth, you would have done the same thing that they did. Everything that you're saying here is very hypocritical in that regard.
They're living under socialism in Mexico. That's the socialist system.
That's the system that they fled.
Yes, and then
they ran away from it. They don't think they're voting the same way. They think they're free in America now. They don't understand what's happening to them.
So what is your suggestion? Just say, oh, that's so nice that you came here from Mexico, and I'm so proud that you waved that flag there of a nation that you left because of oppression?
I never said anything like that.
It is. You said that they can wave any kind of flag they want, and that doesn't bother you one bit.
Doesn't bother me at all if they're not hurting the person or property of any other human being. I don't care what flag they wave. I don't care if they drape it over their head and wear it to church. It's none of my business.
You think they'd be so grateful to be here that they'd kiss the ground they walked on?
Let me tell you something. Most of them are so grateful to be here that sometimes they do kiss the ground they walk on.
And yet they flag the flag.
Let me say this again. If you were born and reared under the same circumstances that they were, you would have come across the border and be doing the same thing that they're doing right now.
Waving the flag of the country I fled because I was starving.
You can't.
I don't think so.
You don't know that. You haven't been reared in that culture. Haven't been raised as a Mexican male expected to carry the machismo with you.
Yeah, well, the machismo. I don't know. Perhaps maybe they are just plain stupid.
I think, my friend, that I think you better go in the bathroom, look yourself in the mirror, and, try and figure out again who's stupid. Because you claim to be an American before freedom.
Yep.
What I hear here is not somebody who gives a damn about freedom.
So you reckon,
except for your freedom.
Would you say that it's safe that a person should be able to destroy the nation through freedom of speech if they wish?
Who's destroying what? Who's destroying what?
Well, the conquering force is here.
What conquering force? Somebody got a gun to your head? The conquering force, my friend, is not in Southern California, and they're not Mexican. They're in Washington, D.C., and you probably voted for them.
No, I didn't vote for them.
You didn't?
No. not
so much for your theories.
Yeah,
you're complaining about how the Mexicans vote. You didn't even vote.
Well, yeah, I did.
You just said you didn't vote for them. If you voted, you voted for somebody, and they're in Washington, D.C., aren't they?
I didn't vote for any Democrat. I voted for people. I talked about peace, prosperity, and individual liberty in the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. Those are the people I voted for.
You don't know anything about it. You're telling everybody that they can't have liberty or freedom unless they have it your way.
I'm telling you that I don't think that you should be able to wave a foreign flag in America. That's what I'm telling you. And I think that
you're going to have some real big fights on holidays where all of these different people from who've immigrated from foreign countries march down the street with their flag.
Maybe they shouldn't. Maybe they should all give tribute to the nation that's been so good to them.
I think until everybody in this world understands what freedom really is and allows everybody else to be free, we're always going to have wars and misery and killings and crimes and persecution and dictators and bigots like you.
Well, I don't believe I am a bigot.
That's what I hear.
Then you're not listening carefully enough.
I'm listening very well. I hear a bigot on the other end of this telephone.
I'm listening to a conquering force, and I don't care if people wave Russian flags.
It's obvious that you don't care.
That I don't think it's right. I think that when people come here, that they ought to adopt the Constitution and the principles of America and leave their slave state cultures behind.
How can they do that when most American sheeple don't even know what the Constitution says and never read it in their entire life? Have you read it?
Yeah.
What's Article 4, Paragraph 4 say?
I don't know it by heart. I can give you the 10 door, right?
Well, if you've ever read it in your life, you don't even have to hear Paragraph 4. What's Article 4 say?
I don't know.
Article 4, Paragraph 4 guarantees to all Americans and the several states a Republican form of government.
Oh, that's sad. I wish everyone were as well educated as you are.
I do too. And I wish everyone who pretended to know something about freedom and want to criticize other people because they don't know about it knew what they were talking about.
You're sure you're a constitutionalist and not an anarchist?
No, I'm not an anarchist at all.
Oh. You do know the difference?
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, okay. I
do not condone the far left or the far right. I condone constitutional Republican government that protects the individual rights and freedoms of all people in this country. I wish it could be that way all around the world for all people. There is nothing in the Constitution or in the law that says a Mexican person cannot have a Mexican flag on his porch if he wants. So let me ask you,
yep.
Do you understand the difference?
What's that? Between anarchy and a republic?
Yeah.
Yes, I do, huh?
Then why are you trying to force your will on other people when there's no law that says they have to do what you want them to do?
Well, for the simple reason that the communists have got such a great foothold in our nation. And
that we can agree 100% on.
That how about Joe McCarthy? Shouldn't he have just let these communists subvert the nation instead of going after them?
No, not at all.
He says, oh, well, they got a right to be communists. They got a right to subvert the nation.
They do have a right to be communists. They absolutely do have a right to be communists, but they do not have a right to subvert the nation, nor do they have a right to try to foment insurrection, nor do they have a right to subvert and destroy this country from within or from without. Nor should they be allowed to occupy any government office or any office of public trust in any city, county, state, or in the federal government because they have made it clear that their goal is the destruction of the United States of America, even if they have to do it through armed revolution. That's why.
You don't believe the border invasion is part of this plan?
I didn't say it wasn't.
Okay.
I said don't blame those people. They are ignorant, poverty-stricken people, and you, if you were in their shoes, would do exactly the same thing to get away from it.
The ones that I'm referring to are not the ones that you are speaking of. The ones I'm referring to are the ones that were born here and that the communists have got a foothold within. Those are the ones I was referring to specifically.
Well, I've never seen anybody that was born here that doesn't consider themselves to be a loyal American. No matter what country they originally came from. They have
unfortunately, you're not living in Southern California.
I have lived in Southern California for many years.
I see it quite a bit, and what I see is a border invasion and a conquering.
I thought you said you were talking about the ones that lived here.
Yes, I am.
Then now you're talking again about the border invasion. That's what you've been talking about all along.
It's the border invasion on the one hand. They live here on the other, and they reproduce. quite frequently. And you call it racist if you want.
Yeah, I think it is racist. I think it's not only racist, but I think it's bigoted.
Well, maybe it is. Is it a fact? Is it a fact that they have more children than other races if you want to put people in racial categories? Which I myself usually don't, but...
they don't have more children because they want to have more children. They have more children because their church tells them they can't practice birth control.
They don't have it because they're subsidized to reproduce?
No.
Oh.
No.
What evidence?
Most Hispanics aren't subsidized. Most Hispanics are very proud people and don't like to accept welfare, and they won't do it unless they have children that are almost starving. They work. And they work at jobs that nobody else will accept so that they can have work. Pardon?
You have evidence of that?
Yes.
You've been down to the relief office?
I certainly have. You find mostly whites at the relief office and mostly whites on welfare, regardless of what you've been told or what you think. Mostly whites are on welfare. Mostly whites are on welfare.
Percentage-wise or the number of people?
What are you talking about, percentage-wise?
I'm talking about...
Mostly whites are on welfare. What about that sentence do you not understand?
More whites are on welfare.
More whites are on welfare than any other race.
And there are more whites than any other race at this time.
So what? All I hear from people like you is that the white race is the superior race. They shouldn't be on welfare if that's true.
The truth is that
they're just people.
I really resent you saying that. I've never said that in my life.
From people...
And I don't believe it.
Well, maybe you didn't, but most of the people whom I hear the kinds of things that I'm hearing from you say that as a matter of routine.
And there is some validity to it, and I see it.
Well, I thought you never said that.
Somebody like Bob Dornan.
Listen,
we're
out of time, and we've got to let you go because it's the end of the broadcast, and we don't get extra time. Hello? I don't know where he went. Who the hell cares? Good night, folks. And God bless each and every single one of you. And tonight, when you go to bed, kind of reflect upon what freedom means. If freedom just means you want everybody else to do what you believe in your religion or what you believe in your life, or what you think they ought to do, or what just black people do, or just what white people do, or whatever the hell race you belong to, then that's not freedom. And you don't believe in freedom. And I think that until all of us understand what freedom is and start to believe in it, nobody is going to ever have any freedom in the future if these socialist jerks have their way. And that's exactly what they're going to have if you all don't wise up. And I mean it. You've got to wise up. Real quick, you can't be for freedom and then march around denying everybody else their freedom. You can't do it. If you take freedom away from anybody, then you have also taken it away from yourself. And you enable those who would enslave us all to do it quicker and more efficiently and more thoroughly and more deadly, I might add. What do you care how other people live? As long as they're not hurting you or your property. What do you care? And I might add, as long as they're not hurting any other person or any other person's property. What do you care? What do you care? I know exactly what's wrong with the world. And I know why there's never going to be peace in the world. All of you, go in your bathroom tonight and look in the mirror, and you will find the answer staring you right in the face.
Now it's time to say goodbye to all our company. MICKYMOUSE. Come along and sing our song. And join our family. MICKYMOUSE. Mickey Mouse. Mickey Mouse. Forever. Let us hold out. Through the years, we'll all be friends, wherever we may be. Ooh. might be. Oh, we're gonna see you real soon. Oh, we're gonna see you real soon. Hey, why because we love you. Oh, because we love you. Oh, because we love you.
You've been listening to The Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper. Be sure and tune in again tomorrow night for more of the same. Like it or not, that's what you get on The Hour of the Time, the truth. No matter who it hurts or helps, even if it hurts me. You're listening to 101.1 FM Eager.
And now we recreate a very special scene for This is the Army. Let us go back 25 years to the Century Theater in New York, where another all-soldier show, Yip Yip Yap Tank, is playing. The curtain is going up on the second act. The scene, a barracks at Camp Upton on Long Island.
Okay, you guys, it's 9:30. Time for lights out.
Oh, Sarge, leave the lights on a few minutes longer, will you? I got to find out who wins the girl in this magazine I'm reading.
Maybe you'd like me to get you a special bed lamp. Come on, please, you mug.
I get out of this army, I'll show that.
I'm gonna bust that jiggle some morning.
Stuart!
Yeah.
Roswell here. Bush here. Reeves.
Go.
Simon.
Go.
Berlin. Berlin.
Where is that guy?
He said he was tired, Sergeant. If you wanted him for anything, you could find him in the barracks.
Oh, he did, he? Let me at him. Come on, Sleeping Beauty. You gotta get up, you gotta get up, you gotta get up this morning. I've been a soldier quite a while and I would like to state the life is simply wonderful, the army food is great. I sleep with night.